Okay, we're starting at the Mishnah on Samach Dalet Amud Bet. What we have here is a slew of Mishnayot that are going to connect by one thing. If you look back at Samach Gimel Amud Aleph, the one we just dealt with, it says there at the very end of the Mishnah, there was the issue of when you went into this Me'arah, when it was Safek, whether you were Nitmar or not. So there was a question of whether if you were already Tameh, then we say you're Tameh. And if you're already Tahor, then we say you're Tahor, right? In terms of the, if you're Rad Litbol, right, from Tumat Meh. So if he was Tameh, when he goes into this water, Litbol, then even though he was Tovel, since there was a suffix that maybe he was Nogea into some Tumah, he keeps his Tumah. In other words, whatever you're, they say Sheraglayim Ladavar, your Bechezkat, right, you're already, that's what you're at. And we don't change your status, basically. So we're going to see a bunch of Mishnayot that talk about this when it comes to other issues. So the Mishnah starts in Samach Dalet Amud Bet. Hamotzei Met B'Tchila, Mushkav Kidarko, Notlo Ve'et Tfusato. If you see a mate, okay, you find one dead body on the side of the road and not in a place that you knew was a cemetery, and it's Mushkav Kidarko, we'll see in the Gemara what they darshan from this, what exactly this means. Okay, but basically, if you want to say it in simple words, the way a regular Jewish person would be buried. Notlo, you're allowed to take him out of this burial place, and the idea is put him in a more respectful burial place. Ve'et fusato, if you remember, we talked about this, you take some of the stuff from underneath. Okay, we're going to see there's a machloket exactly what is this fusato, what do you take with you, there's a machloket about it. Shnaim, if you find two dead bodies next to each other, again, the same halacha, notlan ve'et fusatan. Matzah shlosha, but once you find three, im yesh ben ze leze midalet amot ba'ad shmone, harei zo shchunat kfarot. If the distance between them is somewhere in between four amot and eight amot, not more, not less, then you can assume that this is part of a cemetery and you just don't see all the other bodies. And therefore, first of all, you have to treat it as a cemetery, meaning you cannot remove the bodies. Okay? If someone's buried in a regular cemetery, then you're not allowed to remove the body. And bodek hemenu ulahala nisrim ama. You have to check the whole surrounding area, 20 amot. Matza echa b'sof esrim ama. If you get to the edge of the 20 amot and you find one lone body there, then but then you have to keep checking. Okay, what do we assume? That we already established that there was a cemetery here. So it could be we can't find all the bodies in between. But if you see every 20 amot, then you can assume that they're all part of the same cemetery. But if you were to first find that one that was 20 amot away, since it's an individual, right, if you find it on its own, you obviously don't have to treat it like it was a cemetery. But in this case, since we established that right here is a cemetery, therefore if you find one lone grave 20 amot away, within 20 amot, we can assume that it's still part of the same cemetery. That's the whole issue, Sheraglayim L'davar. But if there was no Raglayim L'davar and you just find that body, then obviously you can be notlo ve'et tfusato. You can remove it and then you'd have to take with it the extra stuff. Okay, Amar of Yehuda. Now we're going to darshan. This is actually a strange wording because it really sounds like he's darshaning a pasuk. This is a typical thing that we would see where they take a pasuk and they say, okay, matzah prat lematzui, meit prat laharu, mushkav prat leyoshev kederko, prat leyoshev, kederko prat le sherosho munach ben yerechotav. Okay, what they're basically doing is they're darshaning all the words here, not instead of a pasuk here, they're darshaning the words of the Mishnah. So let's go back to the Mishnah for 1 minute. Hamotzei, okay, so there they're darshaning matzah. Okay, if you find someone, okay, hamotzei meit b'tchila mushkav kedarko. Okay, so they're going to darshan most of these words. So matzah prat lematzui, if it was already known, this has to be where you didn't know that there was a grave there. A known grave, this sounds a little like the kever tahom, right? A known grave is treated differently. But if you didn't know there was a grave there and you happened upon a grave, in that situation you're allowed to move the bone, the body. Mate, prat laharug. This law doesn't apply. Okay, now this relates to dafka, the carrying the tfusa with you. Doesn't apply if the guy was killed. Okay? a mate, they assume, means only someone who died. And the assumption is, we're going to see later, that if he doesn't have one of his limbs, we saw different halachot about someone who's missing some of his limbs, and they assume that someone who's dead either doesn't have all his limbs, or it's just we treat him as if he doesn't have all his limbs because he was killed. And there's no halacha of tfusa, of taking all the stuff with it. Mushkaf, he was lying down. So pratli yoshev, if the person was sitting up, he was buried in a sitting seated position, then you wouldn't have to do this, as you wouldn't have this halacha of the tfusa and all the things, the details about it. Kidarko prat l'sheroshom unach ben yerechotav. Okay, again, the normal way, as opposed to if his head is in between his legs. Okay, tane ula barchanina. He learns a bright. We're going to see in a minute what's the reason for all these things. Meit shechaser ein lo tfusa velo shkunat farot. Okay, if you have a mate that's missing a body part, then he doesn't have a tfusa and he doesn't have a din of shkunat farot. Okay, we're going to see this. All this goes together. That is, if you don't have tfusa, then you don't have the shkunat kfarot. Okay, meaning that we assume that this was a one-off, right? We don't treat it as a cemetery. Do you find these bones? And now we're going to see the issue for most of these. Now, mecha chaser is one halacha. Bechol hale my time alo, amrinan dilma ove kochavim hu. What's the issue? You find this body, you don't know if it's a Jewish body or not. So we judge it by the way that it was buried. Jews were buried in a particular way. And there was a manner they did it. They were lying down. They were, right, as opposed to sitting up. Their head wasn't between their legs. And that's all these certain things are indicative of the fact that it wasn't buried like a Jewish person would be buried. And therefore, the assumption is, okay, that's different from the Haruk. That's exceptional to the other ones. But certainly the Mushkav and the Pradli Yoshev and Kedarko, Pradli Shavashomunach Ben Yerechotav, that has to do with the assumption is it was a non-Jew. The first two, about it being a known grave, obviously then, you know, known grave is just treated differently. That's a different halakha. And the May Prat Laharuk has to do with this issue of missing a limb. And if you're missing a limb, then it also doesn't have this halakha. Why exactly? I don't know. What's the connection between missing a limb and not having this halakha? It could be that also they think that you were buried in a non-typical way because you died in a non-typical manner. But I don't know exactly. Yeah.
Like something for people who are amputees.
Like, how does that relate to someone who? Right.
I'm just curious.
Right. It's a good question.
I
don't know enough about it.
Lying just anywhere. Bodies today are all buried properly in cemeteries.
Right. Well, you're right. This is all talking about if you were to remove the body from a grave. Right. So, you know, but we did see other halachot about them that they were treated differently. There was something else that I think was more relevant, but I forget. Forgot what it was. Remember about if you're missing a limb, then there's
a was it a tummy issue?
I think it was a tumah issue, yeah. Which also, I guess, isn't relevant anymore. Okay. What?
If I found a body lying, bones lying on the side somewhere, I would call the police.
Times were a little different than those days. Okay. Matzashnaim, Rosho Shel Zeh, B'tzav Margalotav Shel Zeh. Okay, we're going to have more cases where also, it's indicative that this isn't the typical way they buried people. Okay, so if your head was by the, in general, people were buried facing all the same direction, okay, in rows, the way you would imagine a cemetery today. So if you find two people, one, the head of one is by the feet of the other, then ein lahem tfusa. Okay, here it's Rosh Hashanah B'tzamar Galotav Shalzev, Rosh Hashanah B'tzamar Galotav Shalzev. One was right there, each facing, right there next to each other with the opposite direction. So then, ein lahem tfusa v'lo shkunah kfarot. Matzah shlosha, what if you find three? Ha'achad yadua, one was a known grave, u'shnayim tchila, but two you just found out about. O, shnayim tchila, or two you knew of from the beginning, shnayim you just found right now, u'shnayim yadu'im. And then you found two that were known about. Ein lahem tfusa v'ein lahem shkunah kfarot. What do you see here? When this whole din of three has to do with three of all the same type. So when we said that there's no halakha of tfusa and shkunah kvarot if you know there was a grave, so if you have a mixture, a combination, any sort of combination, if you don't get up to three in any one area, then we're not going to judge it like it's a shkunah kvarot. Matzah shlosha, did I skip that? No. Ma'aseh b'Rabbi Yeshvav. Shabadaku matzah, shnayim yiduim, ve'achad tchila. There was a case with Rabbi Yeshvav that found two that were known of, that were known already, v'chad tchila, and one that was new. Ubikesh la'satan shkunak farot, and he said, oh, look, here we have three graves. This should be a shkunak farot. But we already just learned that it's not, right? So Amar la Rabbi Akiva, kol she'agata la'rik yagata. Everything you thought of trying to make this into a shkunak farot was just for no reason. Because lo amru shkunak farot, ela l'shlosha yiduin o l'shlosha tchila. As they have to be of the same type and not a different type. So it doesn't work.
Which is kind of a lot. I mean, it doesn't make any sense. It defies common sense. Because if you see three graves together, you're
right.
So the question is, what's the difference? The whole, let's say they did determine that it was a bit curled, then the whole area would be the same level of tumatame. And if it was just three individual graves, it would just be whatever is, if you cross over it and not in between them.
The issue, it's not a tumah issue that we're talking about here. The issue is, can you move the graves or not? That's if they're on the side of the road and not judged as a cemetery, in other words, they're not in a cemetery, then you can move them. And then also you have to move them with the ground underneath. If they're in a cemetery, then you're not allowed to move them. You can't remove bones that are part of a cemetery. That's the issue. Here we're not talking about tumah. I don't think there would be relevance to tumah, although I could be wrong. But I don't think so.
So when we minimize the number of cemeteries that they,
what?
No, so then that makes more sense why they would call something with three different types of graves not a cemetery.
Right.
So
although the truth is, it does have somewhat to do with. We're going to see soon. It does have to do with tumah a little bit. They. One second. Maybe no. Maybe it's right. I think it's that, but I think the idea of being able to move these furrow would minimize tumah. In other words, I think the idea was they didn't like, we're going to see this up ahead a little bit, they didn't like graves on the side of the road because how are Kohanim supposed to know about them? So if you found them that way, the best thing to do is to remove them and put them in a proper cemetery. I mean, besides the fact it's not covered
right,
on mate, it's also another issue, but the fact that you then end up having all this tumah all around. And I think that that's the motivating factor here about wanting to move them is to be able to allow us to minimize all sorts of random tumot in all sorts of places.
So when we say that you have to, it has the din of tfisa or doesn't, what does that say?
So tfisa is something else. So we're going to see this in a minute, what this tfusatan is. In other words, there's two issues here. One is, can you remove them? Is it considered a cemetery? You know, in which case you can't remove it. And if it isn't considered a cemetery, then you're allowed to remove it. But then the question is, how do you remove it? What comes with it? Because what's the issue? That there's tumah, the body has its blood came and, you know, other parts got into the ground around it. Or maybe there's bones in the ground around it. We're going to see two different approaches, really. Maybe there's stuff there that, you know, is part of the body, right? It could be bones cracked and fell and there's pieces of the bones. Right. It's also a question of how long it's been there. So, notlan ve'et tfusatan. Hechidami tfusa. What is tfusa? Amar Rav Yehuda. So here actually the question isn't the typical hechidami. This really means, where do we know the din of tfusa from? Okay, where do we learn it from that you have to carry more with it? Amar Rav Yehuda amar kra unisatani mimitzrayim. Okay, who said that?
Yosef.
Yosef says, I want you to take my body up from Mitzrayim. So it seems, it's not clear, there could be there's different reasons, but one of the interpretations I saw said that, why does he say mi Mitzrayim? Obviously, they're going to take him from Mitzrayim. Okay, now where else are they going to take him from? He could have just said, and take my body with you. So what do they say? Tol imi, in other words, take with me some of Mitzrayim. It's take with me some of the ground. Now this is also strange because he wasn't buried in the ground. The assumption was. So, it's a little bit of a rachok drasha, but they connected to the pasuk echshu, right?
It
was Yaakov who asked of Yosef? Oh, that's funny. I thought it was Yosef who asked them to bring it. Thank you. Okay. So, it was Yaakov who asked from Yosef to bring him up to Mitzrayim. And so the question is, was he buried? Right? So, the interpretation
He wasn't buried in Egypt either. They just took it. When he died, they went right to bury him. In Marat Machpelah.
Right. It's a good question. Okay.
Unless they're trying to take the typical, like embalming is not a Jewish thing, and they're trying.
Right.
To, but even if
right,
it's,
that, it's not uncommon that they. So first of all, one of the interpreters I saw said that he thought that they were going to bury him in the ground.
Right.
Whether they did or not is irrelevant. He thought that they were going to do that. Or sometimes you have the rabbis put their reality onto what the avot were doing. You know, in other words, even if that wasn't the reality there. Again, this is another good situation where they don't really learn it out from this pasuk. They're trying to find some sort of pasuk where we could connect it to that might, maybe there was some connection there. Okay. Bekamashi or tfusa. So here we're going to have the first interpretation. Peresh Rabbi Elazar, notel afar tichach, v'chofer v'betula shalosh etzbaot. You take the dirt that's around there and you dig down 3 finger breaths, okay? Like this amount, okay? The width of your finger. And you dig down that amount. The assumption is there's blood that dripped down into the dirt around, and that's how much you take out when you take out this body. Meitive, but wait, we have a question on what Rabbi Elazar said from a Braita. Bekama shi'or tfusa, peresh Rabbi Elazar v'Rabbi Tzadok, notel et hakismin ve'et haksasot, v'zoreg et havada'im u'meniach et hasfekot. He gathers all like the twigs and how do they translate sasot?
Clumps of earth.
Clumps of, okay, chunks of earth that are there, okay, all sorts of things that are around. They go through them. And things that are vadai, not, right, they things that are vadai, not part of the dead body, so they throw away. And meniach et hasfekot, and they leave the ones that are also safek, the hashar, and the rest of what's left that wasn't a safek is mitzarif l'rov binyanel shalmet or l'rov ha'atzamot and l'melo tarvad rakav. Okay, and everything else joins up to be considered in, if we're going to count rov ha'atzamot and we want to measure, and is this mitame ba'ohel, all those other things are part of those shirim. Now we have a bit of a question here, we'll leave it as a question, but this melo tarvad rakav, do you remember, it can't be combined with anything, it has to be just stuff that's dust from the body. So this seems to be some sort of combination of stuff, and how could that be? So either this disagrees with the conclusion of the Gemara there, where we said it's only when it's pure body. That's one explanation. Otherwise, it's really a little difficult. Okay, so anyway, what's the question here? This definition of tfusa has nothing to do with the definition that Rabbi Elazar said before. Okay? Right, there are apparently 2 different Rabbi Elazars. Right, this Rabbi Elazar is in Emora, the first one, and the second one they're quoting is Rabbi Elazar Rabbi Tzadok. You can see, by the way, in parentheses it says Rabbi Tzadok at the first one. You can see how there was a mistake because it's Rabbi Elazar and then there's Rabbi Elazar Rabbi Tzadok. They clearly can't be the same people because one is in Emora and they're bringing a question on him from a Braita. But the person writing it obviously didn't realize that, right? The scribe, the sofer, and he accidentally, you know, this is a very common mistake. When there's a Rabbi Elazar and a Rabbi Elazar 2 lines later, you know, his eye shifts and he writes Rabbi Elazar Rabbi Tzadok. But clearly that's not the right nusach. So there's a problem with what Rabbi Elazar says because of what Rabbi Elazar Rabbi Tzadok said, which has nothing to do with what he said. So what do they say? No problem. Hu de'amar ki hai tana detanya. He holds like a different tana that we know of, because it says in a braita, bekama shior tfusa, amar Rabbi Yochanan min shum ben azai, notel afar tichoch v'chofer bebetula shalosh etzbaot. In other words, you have no problem when you ask a question on a mora, how could you say this if a tana said something else, when there's another tana that holds like what he does. So basically, there's a machloket tana'im about what exactly this is. Is it taking dafka parts of the body that are laying around near the grave, or dust from it? Or is it taking all the ground underneath because maybe there's some blood from the body there?
They could actually resolve it anyway by saying that you probably need about 3 fingers worth to get all of the clumps and everything that might...
Except that in his interpretation, you kind of do a...
But you sort it, right?
But according to this, you don't sort it. That's the tfusa. You take all this stuff. It doesn't sound like you sort it. It sounds like you take everything 3 finger breaths.
In both cases, you're doing a lot of digging.
That's true.
But this,
in any case, in a grave, you're going to write it. The assumption is you'll be digging. I think it seems clear that he doesn't think you sift through. You bring all of that dirt that's around. Yeah.
Okay.
Bodeh kemenu. So now you're supposed to book bodeh 20 amot. Amarav. Badak ufana, badak ve'eshkach. Let's say he checks and he finds a body and he moves it. Okay? And he moves it with all the stuff. And then later, he checks that area again, and he finds another body. Okay? Ufana. And he removes it. Badak ve'eshkach. Okay, so now what if he then finds later a third body in the area? So now what's the story? You know, he already moved two bodies, but now really it's a shkuna kvara. Sorry, this doesn't have to do with the 20 amma. This is just, you know, checking within that area. So if you basically remove a body thinking there's nothing else, and then you check and you find another one, fine, you remove that one. But then you find a third, then what? So lohai mifane legabehanach tre, but lohane tre legabehai. In other words, these no longer connect. Okay, according to this interpretation. You don't need to bring back the two and put them back in the cemetery where they were to begin with. But you also can't remove the third one.
Why?
Okay? Because now it's clear that the third one was in a shchunat kvarot.
If you've already removed the shchunat kvarot by removing the first one.
No, because the assumption is that there must be more. In other words, the whole issue is once you find three, the assumption is you're in an area where there's a cemetery. Okay? So... So now you can't be mifaneh that third body, okay? Legabei haichad, okay? Below hanetre legabei haichad, right? Then those two don't have to be brought back on account of the one. Ika de amre. Some people say that that wasn't what Rava said, and that with this is what Rava said. Amar Rava, okay? Kevan shenitna reshut lefanot mifaneh lahon. Okay, exactly, Aviva. What you wanted to say is, once we gave permission to find out, so now this last one is just left by itself, and we should be able to remove it. So then they say, but I don't understand, why wouldn't you turn this like the first, right? This is two versions of what Rebbe said. According to this version, why wouldn't you say like we thought Rebbe said in the first version, which is, this now we've proven there's three farot here. So Amarish Lakish, Ilamatz Uvatiru Eretz Israel. They didn't want to turn places into cemeteries if they didn't have to. They didn't want to create more problems of tumah. So they basically, better to just say, oh yeah, you can remove this one, because at this point it's judged totally independently. As whatever happened before, we don't, you know, they're no longer here. So we no longer have three, and therefore we can judge it independently and try not to create more tumah problems. Badat me'asrim amah v'lo matza, mai. So let's say you check 20 amah and you don't find anything. Amarav Menashe bar Yirmiyah Amarav Shchunat Kfarot. It's still a Shchunat Kfarot. Okay. So it's still a Shchunat Kfarot, even if, and if you find these three Kfarot, and then you check the, you know, perimeter of 20 Amma, and you don't find anything in that area, so maybe you say, oh, maybe there really isn't a Shchunat Kfarot. But they say, no, it still is. Okay? These next words, my time, Amar Rish Lakishi, Lama Tzubatiru, Yisrael, seem to be a mistake. They don't belong here because it would be the opposite, right? Here it's Dafka, the opposite logic, which is they Dafka Romitame, Yisrael, they made this whole area into a cemetery now. So it seems that this doesn't belong here. Okay? See a lot of mistakes in the text here.
My great grandfather was buried in a tiny cemetery behind the Tachanun Merkazi, and somebody in the family went, couldn't find it, and sent around this message that they had moved the entire cemetery.
Really?
Which is, you know, not possible. In the middle of Jerusalem, they're not moving
right.
Cemeteries.
No,
so I went
not.
And took a picture of it and sent it around.
Okay, you found it.
Yeah, I know it is.
Okay.
It's
so
six,
the question
12
is,
graves.
If you could do that, like I'm thinking about the problem they had at the Barzilai Hospital when they wanted to build a new ward there. If they just dug and they found one grave and they said, okay, we're not looking anymore, let's move it.
Right.
And then they did that three times or however many times. They could, in theory.
Right. In theory, it sounds that way. Although, right. It's a good question. Yeah, I didn't look up halacha lemaaseh. I mean, this would obviously be very relevant for many situations in Israel where they all of a sudden, you know, they're doing archaeological digs and they find things and all. This comes up all the time. I didn't look up the practical, but it would be very interesting to see.
I was just curious. We know people who, for all the right reasons, who have parents buried in Chul and have them moved here.
Right.
And that, well, I was thinking about this, reading this.
Right, so how do you do that?
You
so
do
that's,
it?
Right. That's a different, I think
that's
the...
Cool. It's not a problem.
The issue of moving it to Eretz Israel is a different issue.
There might be somewhere in the Gemara also said that, or I don't know if it's the Gemara or more modern sources that say, try to discourage people from doing that, because they wanted to turn to one big cemetery.
Right. There's issues of that. I mean, in general, there's issues of moving graves. So there is, you know, there are definite issues about it. I don't remember how it all plays itself out, lahalacha. Okay, I want to move on so we can get done. I want to get to the mission at the bottom of Samach Vav Amud Aleph. Okay. Kol safek nigaim b'tchila. Okay, remember what I told you. We're now dealing with issues that you're in a tame situation, right? Raglayim ledavar. This one actually doesn't say raglayim ledavar, but it's similar. Kol safek nigaim b'tchila tahor. Ad shelo nizkak letumah. If you have an issue of a safek nega, what's the issue? You go to a kohen, you have some sort of a nega. So if sometimes he knows for sure it's tzaraat. If he doesn't know, then you wait. You're a mitzora muzgar. You're closed up for 7 days, right? You're in a waiting pattern. You wait. He comes to look at it. He checks for a few things. Did the nega get bigger? Did you get, like, did you grow a white hair on it? Okay, did it, there's like a bunch of things they check for. And then, if those things happen, then he determines that you're a mukhlat. Now, what if he's not sure if it grew? Okay, there's a sefek about whether it grew or not. Or there's a sefek, let's say it grew already, and let's say you're a mitzora mukhlat, but then he wants to see, did it shrink? Right, because when it shrinks, then he can determine that you're tahor. So he needs to see a change in it. But let's say he's not sure if there was a change. So that's what we're talking about here. So if you have a sefek negayim, or it could be there's two people who came to the kohen. One had it a certain size, and the other had it a different size. And one grew, and the other one didn't. And he's not sure which one grew, or again, the opposite, to get out of his tumah, which one shrunk. Okay, he's not sure which was the one that was bigger to begin with or not. So if there's some sort of sefek, okay, either one person or two people. Well, there's a machloket about whether it's all about one person or two people. But if there's some sort of safek, b'tchila, tahor, ad shelo nizkak letumah. In other words, if he was in the muzgar, what's the word? He was in the status of being a muzgar. He was not yet tameh. Then what are we going to say? It doesn't say raglayim ledavar here, but that's what it means, right? Basically, we're going to keep you, your safek is going to be tahor. Once you're already tame and he's not sure did it get better or not, then you're going to be considered tame. Where do we learn this from? Which is a little strange that they're asking this question because it's just what we learned, right? So you don't really need to ask this question. We're going to see in a minute that they're going to bring an answer and then they're going to say, oh, you misunderstood. That answer wasn't given to answer this question. That answer was given for something else. Okay? That's Rasha. So first they say, Minani Mile, where do you know that Tzveko Tahor, if you're Tahor, and Tzveko Tameh, if you're Tameh? Amar Rav Yehuda, Amarav, Amar Kra, the Pasuk says, Litaharo o Litamo. The order of the Pasuk is, Litaharo o Litamo. Okay, that's Zotorat Negat Sarat, Begat Atzemro Fishino, Ashti, O Haarev, O Kokli, or Litaharo o Litamo. Okay? So why does it say, Ho Ilu Patacha Katuv Bo, okay? So they're saying, because the pasuk started with the word litaharo, so the suffix we're going to judge litaher. What's going to be the obvious question here? Not every suffix is litaher, right? Ihachi, hafila mishin is kakla tuma, nani sveko tahor. If you're going to say this is a general din in nigaim, that we're going to always say sveko tahor, well, then it should be every case. So therefore, that's clearly not what he was talking about. So Ela ki itmar de Rav Yehuda Marav, when Rav Yehuda said in the name of Rav this drasha, litaro litamo, he was giving it for a different situation. Aha itmar, he was talking about this. Im baheret kadma l'se'ar lavan tameh. Bim se'ar lavan kodim l'baheret tahor. There's an issue about the order of whether, right, the baheret is if it gets lighter, I think. Is that the... Right, when it turns white, there was an issue of the order. So if the beheret came before the white hair grew, then you'd be tameh. And if the se'ar lavan came before the beheret, then you'd be tahor. Okay? And safek, tameh. But if you're not sure which went which way, then you'd be tameh. Okay, which happened first? V'Rabbi Yoshua amar kiha. Now, im keheh nega means if the nega darkened, and that's dafka a good thing. So the question is, what does he mean when he says kehe, my kehe, Amar of Yehuda, kehe v'tahor. What he means is, if you're not sure which came first, then we're going to judge him as if he's tahor. Okay, and then the question is going to be, right, v'dilma kehe v'timei. Maybe he meant, now this is a very strange question. Maybe he meant when he said kehe that it's tamei, which doesn't make any sense, because in the Mitzorah Psukim, kehe is always, it's tahor. So that's not really what the question means, they say. It means... But why wouldn't he say that it's tameh? And as why did he think that it should we why did he say the word kehe? In other words, why didn't he say maybe it should become tameh? Why do you think it would be tahor? And that's going to be our answer. Amar Rav Yehuda kehe v'tahor. Amar Rav Yehuda Amar Rav Amar Kra l'taharo l'tamo ho ilu patach bo katu b'tarat chila. Okay, so dafka in the case where you're not sure, did the Beharet come before the Se'ar Lavan, or did the Se'ar Lavan come before the Beharet, then we're going to be mitaher because of this pasuk l'taro l'tamo. But it doesn't come teach us about our case, about if safek, if pasaneg or not. Okay, new Mishnah. Moving on to Zav. Okay, a few basic facts about Zav that we've seen before, but we'll review them. A Zav sees one Re'iyah, he's judged, he sees this discharge that they call Zav. He's judged as if he has tamei keri. Okay, chuma keri, you're tamei for a day, you go to the mikveh in the morning, you're tahor by the evening. If he sees two Re'iyot, then already has to wait 7 days. Okay, it's different from a woman. A woman, if she sees 2 days, okay, here it's also different. Here we're talking about two sightings, not necessarily even 2 days. A woman, she has to see 3 full days before we call her a Zav Gdola, and then she has to wait 7 days. But a man who has a Zav, he sees 2 Re'iyot, he's already has to wait the 7 days. And then if he sees a third, then he's called a real Zav, and he has to bring korbanot also. Besides the 7-day waiting, he also has special sacrifices he's supposed to bring. By the way, I don't know if you've noticed this, but there's a pattern in all sorts of things we've been seeing about the 2 versus 3, right? This is all dinei chazaka, about 3 and the value of 3. By the way, there's a big machloket. We've seen it in the past about whether a chazaka is established with 2 times or with 3 times. We generally say 3, but there's actually a machloket about it. Some people say 2. And here you see, you know, even the Zav has 2 re'iyot, it's already something, right? 2 is definitely enough to establish something, but not necessarily enough to establish everything. So now there's an issue about a Zav, that if you become a Zav because you were anus, okay? Now, it's a little unclear to me what a Zav is if he's not anus, okay? But the idea is if some external factor rather than an internal factor, although we'll see, a choli they're going to consider external, like a disease. If some external factor caused you to have this discharge, then it's not considered a Zav. Okay? But we're going to learn that that's only for the first 2 re'iyot. But if you already have 2 re'iyot, and your third one is machmat ones, some external thing that caused you to have this discharge, then already we're going to say raglayim ledavar, and you're considered a Zav. Okay? So we'll read it inside. B'shiv adrachim bodkim et hazav. These are 7 things we check for that if it's one of these things, then he's not going to be a zav. Ad shaloni's kach leziva. Okay, we're going to, in other words, bodkim et hazav until the point where he's not already considered a zav. In other words, basically until he has 2 re'iyot already. Now, the first 2 re'iyot we're going to check. B'machal v'mishteh, did he eat too much? And did that cause him to have this discharge? B'masa, did he carry something very heavy? B'kfitza, he did some jumping and that caused it? U'becholi, okay, it was a disease that caused him to have this discharge. Ubi mar'eh, okay, he was looking at a woman, and maybe it caused him. Ubi hirhor, okay, meaning the mar'eh was he just looked at a woman. Maybe he wasn't having thoughts about her. The second one is he actually had hirhorim about a woman, and maybe even if he didn't see her. Okay? Mishin is kach leziva, but once he's already considered a zav, because he had these 2 re'iyot, and then he already has to wait the 7 days, then ein bodkinoto. Then you don't check anymore. For the 3 re'iyah, you don't check. I feel like we were yesterday. Everything's starting to get dark. Onso usveko v'shichvat zarot me'im. Okay, so we're going to see what the... So once now, mishin is kach leziva ein bodkinoto, and therefore, if he's anus, or he's safek, or he's shichvat zera, we don't know what this means yet. We're going to see in the Gemara. Then he's tameh, shevaglayim ledavar. Okay, when it comes to the 3 re'iyah, all these things are going to be metamehim because we're already considering him a zav. Totally new case now. Hamaket chavero. This is actually relevant. If you saw the news, someone who was from the Har Nof incident 11 months ago now died. Yeah. So this is going to be very relevant to that case. Hamaket, and you're going to be a little surprised by what the Mishnah concludes about it. Hamaket chavero v'amduhu limita. If someone hits someone, okay, and then they said this guy's going to die. Vehekel, and then he got better. Mimasha haya, laachar mikain hichbid vamet chayav. Okay, and then eventually he dies. So the guy is chayav as if he killed him because there were raglayim ledavar that he was going to die. Rabbi Nechemiah Omer, so this is a little confusing what Rabbi Nechemiah is talking about. So Rabbi Nechemiah Omer patur shevaglayim ledavar. In other words, it's clear it didn't come from... So one interpretation is it's clear it didn't come from there because he already got better. And since he got better, the fact that he died now, must have been from something else. So that's why, I was thinking about this person who died. You have to wonder, it was 11 months that passed, right? According to Rabbi Nechemiah, you would say you can't really connect it to that incident. Even though... we really know that it is connected. At least you got to assume.
It's gotten better. I don't know that.
Right. So the truth is, it's not the perfect situation, right? Because it could. Right. Exactly. But the question is, what if someone got better? But we still know that even though they got better, probably, there's a connection to what happened then. Had it not happened, he never would have died. So.
It's like the people who are dying now from 9/11.
People who were supposed to Chernobyl died.
Right. Look, there's Holocaust survivors who died younger than they should have because of things that happened to them there, though they died years later. So there's a certain amount of time probably that, there's a certain concept about where exactly we, connect it to that anymore. So that's the issue discussed here. It's an interesting one. Okay, Menane Mile. Amar Rabbi Natan. Amar Kras. So now we're back to the Zav. How do you know that only the first two you have to check for onus and not the third? So what does it say in the pasuk? Okay, let's read the whole pasuk. V'adava b'nidata v'hazav etzavo la'zachar v'lanakeva v'la'isha she'ishkavim t'me'a. Okay, it's comparing the zav to the zava and to the nida. Okay, so now, what do you see here? There's words that seem repetitive. Hazav etzavo. Right, so what do they say? Hazav etzavo l'riyash l'shit itkash l'nakeva. What do they say? There's hazav, which is riyah rishona. Zovo is riyashnia, and then la zachar v'la nekeva must be relating to a third riyah. In which case, they're saying the third riyah is la zachar is the third riyah, and it's la zachar v'la nekeva, meaning the zachar should be the same as the nekeva. Now, if a woman sees blood, so she, right, she's a zava. It doesn't matter whether it came machmat ones or jumping or anything else; she's considered a zava. So, therefore, they say the third riyah of the man is just like the woman's because they make a hekesh in the pasuk. Say, wait a minute. V'ha tanya, don't we have a brayta that says, Rabbi Elazar omer, b'shlishit bodkinoto, b'rivit ein bodkinoto. The third one we still check, only the fourth one we don't check. By the way, in Dinei Chazakot also, there's some opinions that say it's four, not three. It's all different options that go on. So therefore, how could you have this? And as we just darshan the pasuk the way we darshan it, so what do they say? Ela be'etim kamipalge. They're arguing about the word et. Rabbi Elazar darish etim. Rabbanan lo darshe etim. What does it mean? Hazav et zovo. So what does Rabbi Elazar say? That hazav is one, et is another, zovo is the third, and only the lazachar comes up is the fourth. Okay? So. Onso usfiko. So now we have... We had the case where he's already in the third ri'iyah, and we say on so usfeko tmeim. So amarava lo tema safek chaza safek lo chaza. It's not an issue of did he see or did he not see. Ela vadai chaza. He definitely saw. It's just a question. Safek machmat shechvat zera. Safek machmat ri'iyah. Kevan shenizkak lechom usfeko tame. It's unclear whether he saw it because, and the assumption is that because he had some discharge of Shechvat Zera, therefore it caused him to have this Zava. In other words, that's the question. Let's say it was a guy who saw Keri in between, and then he saw this third Re'iyah. The question is, did the Keri, okay, they say the Keri weakens your body. So because it weakened his body, seeing the semen, did that cause him to now have this Zava, and therefore it be considered Machmat Ones? Or not. And in the end, they say, well, if that's the suffix situation, we're going to judge it l'chumra because raglayim l'davar. Since he's already considered a zav, we're going to make that extra jump to make him this zav who has to bring korban. Shichvat zar'o t'me'a. Now we have the next line, which is shichvat zar'o t'me'a, l'mai. What does this mean? I lema l'maga. In other words, it sounds like it's saying, if you're a zav who's in your 7 days of zav, right, you saw three re'iyot, and now you see Shechvat Zera. So Shechvat Zera is Tme'ah. So what do you mean? Ilema lemaga, that if, you know, someone touches the shechvat zera, migara mi shechvat zera de tahor. In other words, if it's tumat maga, so that the shechvat zera of a zav is mitami tumat maga, all shechvat zera is mitami tumat maga. So that's not a chiddush. Migara mi shechvat zera de tahor, right? A shechvat zera of someone who's tahor is also mitami b'maga. Ela zaro shel zav mitami b'masa. If you want to say maybe it's mitami b'masa, remember masa, tumat masa is, if you carry something, let's say on a tray, you're not actually touching it, but you're carrying it on a tray. So if you're carrying it on a tray and you don't actually touch the shechvat zera, maybe what we're saying is general shechvat zera isn't mitame masa, but maybe the shechvat zera of a zav is mitame masa. That's like a chiddush. That would be what we're saying. But man shama lahadam shechvat zera shodav mitame b'masa. But who says this? Ile mahay tana de tanya. Maybe it's this Tana who says in a brayta, Rabbi Lezer omer shechvat zaro shel zav eino mitame b'masa. Okay, Rabbi Lezer says it's not. Rabbi Yoshua omer mitame b'masa lefi she'i efshar la belot sichsuche ziva. If you want to say that it holds like Rabbi Yoshua, who says that a shechvat zera of a zav is mitame b'masa, why? Because it's not possible that there isn't some sort of ziva mixed in with the shechvat zera. But then, afilu Rabbi Yoshua lo amar ala mishum sichsuchei ziva, aval be'enei lo. That's only if you had a discharge of shechvat zera and ziva. But if this guy just had shechvat zera coming out, well then, by itself, it definitely doesn't have ziva in it, and therefore, you would say that it just doesn't even hold like Rabbi Yoshua. Rabbi Yoshua wouldn't even think it's mitame masa. So what could it be that we're saying the shechvat zera is mitame? So el amar av adabar ava lomar she'ein tolimba. Okay, this means second Mazikam Shabbat Tameh. But we don't say second. This is right. We don't say, it's like what we saw before, that we don't say that if we saw the Shechvat Zera and then we saw the Riyash Lishit, that we're going to say that the Riyash Lishit came from the Chulsha of the Shechvat Zera. And not because of, so you don't say it like that because Raglayim L'Davar. Okay, so then they say, Sava Rav Papa Kameh de Rav Lameimar. Rav Papa, when he heard what Rav Ada said, he thought that he meant, Ay de Chulsha Hu de Chazeh. In other words, that we would say, one second, right, we'd say because he was weak, that's why he saw, and therefore, right, and that's why, in other words, there's a distinction between the second Riyah and the third Riyah. But the point of Rav Ada is if the second Riyah came after Shechvat Zera, then we'd say that you're Tahor. And if the third Riyah, right, we'd say you're not a Zav. And if the third Riyah came after Shechvat Zera, we'd say that you're Tameh, because Raglayim L'Davar. And that's all because you'd say, that's what Rav Papa's coming to say, because of the Chulsha of the Shechvat Zera, that's what made you see this Zava. Okay? But whereas when it comes to the Riyash Lishit, we don't say that anymore because you're already a Zav. So Amale Rava, Rava says, what you're saying doesn't make any sense. Why? V'hatnan, isn't there a Mishnah that says, Ger shenitgayer mitamei miyad b'ziva. If you have a ger shenitgayer, okay, and he saw shechvat zera right before he was mitgayer, okay, he's mitamei miyad b'ziva. Even his riyah rishona and riyah shnia, let's say he sees two riyot, we don't say that, oh, maybe because of this chulsha. Okay, now some of the refreshim explain, not only is it the chulsha of the shechvat zera that he saw before when he was a non-Jew, but it's also because the whole Kabbalat Ol Mitzvot weakens you. Like, it's a whole procedure. And therefore, maybe you could say that he saw Zeva because of the procedure he went through. What he's saying, basically, is you can't say because of Chulsha, that's what makes you see Zeva, and that's considered Ones. Doesn't make sense, because this Ger Shenit Gayer should all the more so have Chulsha. And we see, and especially if he saw Shechvat Zera right before, and yet we don't, right, anything before he was a Ger is irrelevant to us. So Rava says that basically knocks down your reasoning. Right? What more holy could you have bigger than this, than becoming a Jew? Right. Ela tinaihi. So what do they say? It's a machloket tanaim. Detanya shechvat zera shel zav mitame b'masa kol me'eit le'eit. Rabbi Yossi omer yomo. Okay, it's based on this machloket tana'im, which is whether your metame, there is a machloket tana'im. In other words, it doesn't have to do with Rabbi Yeshua, who says it's because this sechsuchei zivar mixed up with it. And that was the problem Rabbi had. In other words, Rabbi basically rejects Rabbi Adbar Ava's answer, that that's what it means. He goes back to the original logic, which is saying that it means, that the, you know, it doesn't mean the shechvat zera caused the zav. That's not what it is. It's saying that the shechvat zera of a zav is metame masa. Before we said, but we have no one to rely on. So they say, no, it's based on this machloket. What's this machloket? When Rabbi Yeshua said it can't be, it doesn't have tzichuchei ziva, that was shechvat zera at some point after he saw his riyo, when he's a zav, which, you know, there's like a 7-day period. But now we're going to see that there's a machloket about that maybe there's a shorter period in which either it's, if he sees it on that day, or if he sees it 24 hours from his second riyo, that all would be considered that shechvat zera is metame b'masa. That has a unique halacha. We're going to see it right now. So a shechvat zera of zav, according to the first opinion, is metame b'masa kome late for 24 hours. Rabbi Yossi Omer yomo, just the day that he sees the shechvat, he sees the riyah of the zav, is that day, okay, meaning like till nighttime, he's going to be, his shechvat zera is going to be metame masa, but not after that. So b'may kamiflege, what's their machloket about? But d'shmuel, d'shmuel rami k'tiv, Shmuel says there's this problem with the pasuk, ki yebacha ish asher lo yetahor mikre laila, uk'tiv lifnot erev yurchatz b'mayim. So there's two pasukim, one appears right after the other. Okay, one who says if a person is tahor mikre laila, he sees something at nighttime, and then it says the next day, it says in the next pasuk, lifnot erev of the next day, he goes to the mikveh, yurchatz b'mayim. So manda amar me'ed la'ed di'ek milifnot erev. The one who says it's 24 hours says, well, look, the pasuk refers to a period until the next day of lifnot erev of the next day, which would be about 24 hours later. V'idach di'ek mikre laila. And the other one says, no, it says mikre laila. It happens at night, meaning that the whole period that we're concerned about is just like until the nighttime, basically. Umanda Amra milifnot erev haktiv mikra laila. What does he do with the mikra laila? Amar le, orcha de keri limitya belelya. He says, well, it's generally people see keri at night and not during the day, and that's why it says mikra laila, not for the purposes of darshaning it. Okay, so one darshan mikra laila, meaning it's just until nightfall that you check that the shechvat zera of the zav. What they're basically saying is they're taking this pasuk that has to do with shechvat zera, and they're saying this unique halacha about the shechvat zera of a zav who sees it on the within a day of seeing his zav. And again, the question is within the day until the nighttime, or is it within the day 24 hours? Okay, and that's their machloket, and they're saying that's the shechvat zera, this metame b'masa that he was talking about when he explained that's what our mission is referring to. That's the shechvat zera it's referring to. Not shechvat zera when you're a zav in general, but the shechvat zera within 24 hours or within the day of the day you see the zav. That is unique halacha, that's metame b'masa. Okay, tomorrow we will finish up with the last mishnah about Shmuel and Shimshon being nazirim. Okay, that's for tomorrow for the Siyum.
What a realistic situation would be that it would be